Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dusty and Cam in the morning.
It says here to take two for results in 8 hours. That means we should take eight for results in two. Yep.
With Dusty Hera.
Can't see the line, can you, Russ?
No. And Cam Cleland.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
Dusty and Cam in the morning on 1080.
People don't forget.
The Fan.
All right, hour number two, Dusty here at Camp Cleveland with you. Who are you building your franchise around? It's become a Russell Wilson conversation because he's just not getting very much credit. And you and I both believe he should be getting more credit. If you're looking at the two guys that are playing the quarterback at the highest level in the NFL right now, well, I guess there's a handful of them that really are playing at an insane level. But if you're talking about a future and who's going to be playing this game at that level for an extended period of time, Russ, Mahomes, and, you know, Lamar Jackson, unanimous MVP, I don't blame people for thinking that, right?
So take any of those top five quarterbacks that you have currently as they sit in however you would rank them or anything, look on that. Of those top guys, when you think Mahomes and Wilson, would any of those franchises brought in a potential backup or tried to do something to try to get their quarterback and to look at it? Because I look at Drew Brees, the reason why they bring in and you're looking at making sure as you're older, if you're an older quarterback, you want to have a backup philosophy because these guys are older and they have an injury history, correct? You know, Aaron Rodgers has had a couple injuries, so they're like, we better draft somebody. I don't want to. You think this guy's athletic, we can do this. I mean, you bring in Jameis Winston because he's first of all, he's cheap and he wants to learn, and that's an unbelievable backup, a quality starter, a guy that's been a starter in the league. You do that. Why? Who do you bring in to back up Russell Wilson?
Was Tavares Jackson still the guy back there? No. Geno Smith? And then they drafted the Washington State guy, Gordon, yeah. Anthony Gordon.
So it's not like I know they kicked the tires with Kaepernick. I don't know why they ever did that. I don't know if that was out of a courtesy or they were just saying that they were trying to do stuff. That was a massive distract. That nobody would. There's no way that Kansas City was ever going to bring in Colin Kaepernick to say, let's have that guy back up Patrick Mahomes, because that's a drama that we really want to have to deal with right now. But Seattle sure would. Doesn't make any sense why they would do that, because they have a better quarterback who's, by the way, never hurt. Never gets hit. Russell Wilson never gets hit. He had one little ankle from when Aaron Donald tackled him 2 years ago, and it bothered him the entire season. Has he ever missed a start? I mean, he's an Iron Man. Never gets hit.
Yeah.
So you just, who's the, and I've always asked it too, what's the best free agent that Seahawks have ever signed offensively? And you said Jimmy Graham.
Who at the time, but if you go back at the time, He was a dude in the NFL.
Yeah.
At the time. But they've also gone and they whiffed on a first round pick in Rashad Penny. They did go and they got moved up to get DK Metcalf
They whiffed on another first-round pick at right tackle. Mm-hmm. It's just been one guy after the next.
But hit on 2012's draft so well, you can't expect that every single year because the whiff rate in the draft is pretty high.
Well, also, too, you can spend a long time in life and be successful in life with one song. No, Tommy Two Tone in 8675309, Jenny. Made it a long time and just collecting checks. You can be really good, really good with a couple of little one-hit wonders. You can make it a long time. The Seahawks and Pete Carroll for that draft are a one-hit wonder.
Mm.
Since then, I love the Seahawks. I do. I just give so much more credit to what Russell Wilson to be able to hold that place together along with some good pieces that are around it. But that one draft, even if you go into that one draft and that one run, that's it.
2012, that was a draft, right? But you get Bobby Wagner and Russ Wilson in the same draft. Man, you knocked that thing out of the park. Text at 503-250-1080. This text says, I'm sure if you give it a year or two, you'll hear guys in Kansas City wanting to get paid and complaining about Mahomes' contract. And look, the way that thing's set up, it's probably more like 3 years before people start really hearing the complaints about that, because that's when it really starts escalating in pay is after three seasons. But, you know, that is something that Russell Wilson is up against right now, is he's going to start getting, what is it, $35 million just this next year? Hmm. Is that what it is? But, you know, look, get in line for the teams that are complaining about not being able to build rosters around quarterbacks over the first few years their contract. It is after that when it becomes more palatable because the salary cap keeps on moving up, 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 and up.
You have conundrums in the NFL. You can't win a Super Bowl with a guy that takes up 11 to 12% of the cap, but you can't be in the playoffs without a quality quarterback. So where do you fit in between? Everyone's trying to figure that out. You got to make a run with Dak Prescott. Well, you made a run with Dak Prescott. Now you got to pay him. You got to make a run with Deshaun Watson. You made a run. You had one playoff win, and then you ran into guys. Lamar Jackson's going to want his, but then who do you back him up with? What do you do? Everybody's looking for that. You had you made your run with Ryan Tannehill, and you had Derrick Henry with what Tennessee was putting together. But then you paid
Tannehill.
Then you paid him. So now we have all these other teams like the Jets and are on rookie contracts, and now you're going to see Miami, and then oh my gosh, here come the Patriots because they got rid of their high price guy. But then Tampa jumped in. Oh wait, now Indianapolis signed a cheapish quarterback that's old, but then they drafted a guy in the fifth round to try to be the future. Nobody knows how to figure it out. What we do know, Mahomes and Russell Wilson are the biggest sure thing since the late night date at 1 o'clock when you slid the drink down the end of the bar and she said, yep, I'll go home. That's as sure as it gets.
Pete Carroll claims that Russell Wilson was the guy all along, yet the same year they drafted him, they signed Matt Flynn and, I believe, Tavares Jackson. And that is true, that text coming in, but at the same time, Russell Wilson was a third-round pick, and nobody was sure on what he would be as an NFL quarterback. They're the team that took him, though, you know? And that's what he's going on. And look, as you mentioned in the last segment, when we started this conversation at 6:30, you were like, a rookie mini camp, they sat there and they went, whoa, yep, we got our guy. It didn't take long once they had him to figure it out. And what do you think about this, Texas?
Well, nobody even believed that he was the guy in the media. I had my friend Hugh Miller, we've had Hugh on the show. Hugh said, I will eat a microphone.
Did he?
If Russell Wilson ever develops into a star in this league. And he's like, oh my gosh. Him and both Dave did it, Softy. Mm. They both were like, this is dumb. Matt Flynn, we paid Matt Flynn all this money. Those guys have since eaten massive amounts of crow, and they had to they couldn't legitimately eat it, but they tried to do it on radio.
That's good.
Yeah, I know.
The mic went socky.
But no, even at the time, nobody believed.
This text says, Pete Carroll should have given Lynch the damn ball if that's what he thinks to help Russell's legacy. Do you think that there is some element of, in the back of some of the hot takey guys' minds, that are out there, that because Russell Wilson threw that interception
in the Super Bowl on the goal line.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying here is, because of that play, do you think that people still hold that against Russell Wilson?
I have no idea.
Because I think there is an element of that. People still look at that, and that's in the back of their head. It may not be their number one reason why, But I think that is still there, and that is a... They are
here's a bigger
missing
question.
The mark on what Russell Wilson is.
Here's a bigger question. When you look at Russell Wilson, do you believe him genuinely the way he is?
Well, that is this that text is, here that says he's that, full of ass. Is he the guy at the children's hospital or the dude laying in bed with his smoke show wife doing the Hey Seattle? He's not authentic. I think, I don't know. That's from Deal. I mean, there are some folks that think that tremendously,
but that's just, I mean, that's an opinion, but I don't think anybody walks into going into children's hospitals for a PR stunt on every day of the week with his wife to see kids that are on their deathbeds and cancer does that disingenuously. I think he really does care about people, loves people. I mean, I think he's a great leader. I think he can come off like that. Mm. I think they just don't believe it.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. Some people don't want to believe that. That's fine. You believe what you want to believe. But I watch football and I watch film. Russell Wilson is unbelievable.
Yes, he is. He's really damn good. You know, 503-250-1080. That is a fan text line. That text, by the way, for the folks out there, the Tavares Jackson one was about in 2000.
Who are the backups he's ever had?
Yeah, no, that was a 2012 when they drafted him. They signed Tavares Jackson and Matt Flynn that same year, right? In 2012. So, and now it's the backup's Geno Smith, he who got his job broken by a teammate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. 503-250-1080. That's Fantex. And we'll get some more of your feedback on this as the show goes on. But Stanford, they cut 11 sports yesterday, 11 of them. On the same day that the Ivy League punted on sports in the fall. Dustin Kam on the Fan. All right, news out of Stanford yesterday. The first Pac-12 team, and really the first Power 5 conference team to make massive cuts to their athletic department. They cut 11 varsity sports yesterday, starting at the end of the 2020-2021 academic year. Those sports include... You know, men's and women's fencing, field hockey, lightweight rowing. Didn't know what that was until yesterday. Men's rowing, co-ed, and women's sailing, squash, synchronized swimming. Synchronized swimming is an NCAA sport. Men's volleyball and wrestling. The 11 to go.
Sucks.
Yes.
I am not a huge fan of all those sports, but you know what I'm a huge fan of? Opportunity for athletes and coaches at any level of opportunity to be able to be a part of it, compete together, enjoy a craft that you love to do, enjoy it, and be a part of it. Gone. See you later.
This is something that I find very interesting about the Pac-12 is, remember, Conference of Champions is a thing because of all the ancillary sports that the Pac-12 wins in, right? And a lot of those, Stanford and UCLA, they win national titles in multiple sports every year. We just don't know about them because they're sports like synchronized swimming, right? And, you know, it says in the release that these 11 programs consist of more than 240 incredible student athletes and 22 dedicated coaches that had 20 national championships and 27 Olympic medals in those sports. I mean, they were wildly successful. But here is where that massive letdown of what the Pac-12 is doing as far a network and a revenue standpoint is that Conference of Champions thing, they were spread so thin that Stanford's going, we were going to lose by holding 36 sports and winning those championships. We were going to lose $12 million before the pandemic. And now you're sitting there and you're looking at what were they going to lose post-pandemic? They were estimated best case scenario $25 million deficit this year and a cumulative shortfall of $70 million over the next 3 years post-pandemic. And that is where the revenue that the league is generating just isn't enough to sustain, you know, all of these ancillary sports that are supposed to be propped up by the Pac-12 network.
Well, this was a business decision. It's the same reason why the Ivy League is shutting down theirs is that their sports are non-revenue generating business. So for them to shut down, it's like, all right, shut down. Their billions upon billion dollars of funds that they have coming in have nothing to do with sports. There's no endowments for sports in the Ivy League. There's no, also too, $27 billion endowment to Stanford has nothing to do with athletics. If Stanford wanted to fund this, they absolutely could, but the ones that are giving them the money are not saying send it to sports. They're sending it to other avenues, which is education and all the things that they are pristine in, because nobody really always thinks of Stanford as a super athletic powerhouse. Neither do they think of Ivy League. So I understand the business side of it. So to blame the Pac-12 conference because they don't have enough money for their athletics, we've already beat that one.
But it is a piece of this puzzle that the Pac-12 is the first Power Five conference to see a massive sports be cut.
Well, I understand that, but remember my, like what Buck said at the start of the day, the care more of what Stanford just doesn't care. They obviously doesn't care because they cut all these sports, not for the reason of they think it's important, financial reasons.
But the Stanford Athletic Department has a pretty hefty endowment in their own right. It's almost $500 million that the Stanford Athletic Department has an endowment for. And that is kind of a head-scratching part of
this. $500 million per year?
It's $400 million. No. That's their endowment.
$500 million that they use.
It is $400 million. I said almost $500 million. It's $400 million. And Buck, what did you say the return on that was annually?
It grows 5.5% a year.
So why aren't they? That goes to what you're saying is the Caremore. Why aren't they spending their money then on all those
contingency?
Where's that money going for?
Yeah, I don't have that answer. I mean, nobody has that answer. If it was important to have those 230 athletes and coaches and people in there, they would fund it.
Where was that $400 million from? Because I've seen that number before. That they have this just massive endowment for their athletic department, but what?
I don't really consider that massive. I consider that
$400 million for sports.
Ask what Oregon has, and then let me know what's massive. Ask me what other places have, and that's not massive. Massive is $27 billion. That's massive.
No, I'm talking just for athletics, though. I would be surprised if Oregon had that much in an athletic endowment.
Are you not serious, right?
No, yeah, I would.
His name is Phil Knight.
Well, yeah.
Billions upon billions.
Again,
Phil Knight's still alive.
Phil Knight is
still
a
alive.
Individual donor, not an endowment.
Well, it will be. I mean, it's kind of going to happen. And let's not play. Duh. All right. So the quote really comes down to is that this is it's a pandemic also that's given everybody an easy out to say this is over and done, and this will continue to go. But these Ivy League and high-level schools like that are cutting, that are big into education, I understand it's business. I understand it. But universities that need the money for their athletics, that use it for their business practice, that need that to grow their sports, then that's where we look at it and go, oh boy, it's a little bit more scary.
It is.
Because if Stanford leaves the Pac-12 conference, oh well, nobody, that's the thing is they have no attendance. They're not interesting on television. They're not dramatic. Okay. They can't sell out their own teams, their football program. If they left the conference, it'd be like, all right, see you later. I mean, there's really nobody. They don't move the needle at all. They don't move the needle whatsoever when it comes to the national perspective. They're like, we'll put you on at 9 o'clock when you play Northwestern. That's how much we care about you. You can't even sell out your own home stadium. They don't care. They're not a good TV product. Okay, Stanford, see you later. Be good at education. I'm happy for you. But we're talking about sports and football here.
And they've cut 11 sports.
So you don't care.
They're going to be.
All right. Don't care.
What?
No, I'm just saying. So Stanford doesn't care about sports. Shocking.
Well, that is. But they're not cutting revenue generators. And I think what they're saying is that they're going to probably put more eggs in that basket of the revenue generating sports. Because if you're looking at where those cuts are going to be from in the next TV deal, they will have more money to spend on the revenue generators.
Well, let's also defend the fact
that they have 25 athletics that they're varsity sports that they are putting out there.
It's
25.
I understand that, but it's a nice little thing to do that for Stanford. Stanford's like, look on the outside. We really do care. No, you don't, or you wouldn't have made your education the fact that now student athletes have to leave in their fourth year because none of them can get into your graduate school. So they all guess what? 17 of them end up grad transferring out of the program, and David Shaw has his hands up going, I just lost two depth charts because my school won't allow our guys to get into grad school.
And that is
there you go, commitment again. We don't care about our athletes. We'll put a nice little bow on something, but
Well, it just means something different to go to Stanford. It's very much similar to the Ivy League, which when they canceled their fall schedule.
Yeah.
There were some pretty interesting quotes that came out of it from Ivy League coaches that, it was, first of all, those guys, they will not be penalized for a missed year, the guys and gals, I guess, because all fall sports, they will not be penalized a year of eligibility, but the Ivy League is not changing their rule that you cannot be a graduate student and play at an Ivy League school. So they're going to have to grad transfer if they want to go to a graduate school, right, which would...
And that's their rules. Yeah, that's fine.
It would obviously be a step down to go from a graduate school at a different school or go to a graduate school at a different school than an Ivy League one. Mm-hmm. But they're saying, hey, it was the right thing to do because we don't have to worry about playoffs, for one, and we don't have to worry about revenue because we don't make a whole lot of money off of our TV deals anyways.
So we don't care.
And and one coach said, we've got 18-year-old kids who are going on to go to make a difference in the world. You can't recruit a kid and tell him you care about him, then tell his parents you care for him, and then something happens to him and you could have prevented it. Do I want to win a conference title? Yeah, we all do. But at the end of the day, what matters most? If the kids matter more than income and all those things, I think inevitably we get to the same answer. And I think that quote from a Ivy League coach is the reason why you look at it and you go, the Power Five won't follow the Ivy League like they did with basketball.
And if they do, no. And that's it's
because money does.
It's a pretty pompous comment because all our kids are going on to do better in the world. I don't think anybody goes to college and goes, yeah, I'm here just to hang out. Everybody has aspirations to do better things. Okay, the elitist mentality of the Ivy League is that you already are better than somebody. Well, I know a lot of Ivy League people that they got to the Ivy League because they had their parents able to get them into the Ivy League. So not to put it out there, but we're trying to sit there and say that all of our students are doing a better the world. Come on, man. Not impressed with that.
Did you expect anything different from the Ivy League, though? That's their whole thing, is that Ivy League. We're better than you.
Yeah, we know we're better than you. But you know what you're not good at? Sports. So, sit this one out. We're okay with you.
They literally are sitting this one out, aren't they?
Yeah, quite literally.
That was my point.
They're doing
it. Sit this one out.
What is coming down the pipeline, though, for the Power Five conferences? It doesn't look like they are hitching their wagons to the spring schedule yet for football. But something is coming out of the Big Ten that should open up some eyes and have some local implications. We'll talk about those after Buck with SportsCenter. All right, Ohio State, North Carolina, they put pause on their workouts yesterday due to COVID outbreaks. 37 at North Carolina, not known at Ohio State. But on the heels of that came a report from Rivals that said that the Big Ten is considering a 10-game schedule that features only conference opponents for the 2020 season. And it kind of sounds like the proposal that John Wilner, the San Jose Mercury News, put out there a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Which is they would play a 10-game schedule against all Big Ten opponents, but it would be over a 13 to 14 week period. And according
to buffer weeks.
Yeah, buffer weeks in case. But where do you put those is the thing.
Maybe they're adjustable.
Yeah,
depending on it.
Yeah, but who knows? But that would eliminate three games, and obviously those would be non-conference games, according to this report.
Well, there goes those openers.
From Tom Dinart. But yeah, this is a big one because he does quote he calls it a Power Five source that says, and I mean, this is like, read between the lines, this is a Big Ten coach because...
Source.
The Power Five coach here is saying that this is something he would not be surprised that the Big Ten does this year, is give yourself some flexibility with 2 or 3 weeks where you can kind of dance around and have some wiggle room in case something happens.
Yeah, be flexible. I'm all about it. I think that's what we need to find is instead of talking in absolutes, which everybody, the extremists out there just say, shut it all down, let's follow it. What are the options? What ways can we be creative and follow some good rules and think of things to still have the sports that we need to enjoy that financially these universities need to operate without people having to lose jobs and lose can't function. Universities and athletes and all these people still being able to maintain a small amount, even if it's at 25%, 50%, it's better than nothing than just saying no and just saying shut it down. I think, 10 games and being flexible, I think that's what everybody's going to have to do this year. Yep. Is the word flexible.
And I don't look at it as a bad thing if the Ohio State Oregon game or in the Michigan UW game are pushed back to a later date.
I think it's terrible for this year, but
I see. I don't think it's terrible for this year either, because I mean, look, fans aren't going to be in the stands for those games, and if you have those games coming to your stadiums, don't you want? If you're a fan of UW or Oregon or just a fan of college football and you want to go to those games, I mean, having every home field advantage you could possibly have when those two programs come is a great thing. I mean, it would suck, but if every conference is just going to go down that road of, hey, we're only going to play 10 conference games, I think that you want to do it that way and have every advantage possible when those teams eventually do come to your stadium.
I understand, but we do know that all these conferences operate on different rules. So if the SEC ends up saying, hey, USC, we still want to play you, what is USC going to do? What are they going to say? No? Are they going to say no? But if Ohio State says, hey, I'm sorry, Oregon, we're not going to play you, and then we're like, all right, I guess we'll figure that out. But what if the ACC says something different and they decide? What is Notre Dame going to do when they play a partial? What is Notre Dame going to say when Stanford, USC, we need you? What is then Larry Scott going to come over the top and say, I'm sorry, we didn't let the Big Ten in. We can't let you in, Notre Dame. There's a lot of questions here, but we do know college football is a broken model because there's no uniformity to it. There's no consistency. There's no leadership. Every commissioner is different. Every rules are different. Officials are different. Scheduling is different, for God's sakes. 8 conference games, weeks off in week 10. I wish I had these answers, but I will say flexibility and variation will be the theme of this year.
And I think if you're a fan of the Pac-12, you're probably looking down the road of they won't be the first to announce what they're going to do. They're probably going to be reactionary in this. And if the Big Ten comes out and says they're going to play 10 conference games, I would almost see immediately the Pac-12 to go, yeah, we're going to do the same thing. Because don't you feel like the Pac-12 just doesn't want to be criticized for being the first to do it?
Doesn't want to be criticized being the first to do what?
Yeah,
Shut it all down
that road. Because as you said, what if Alabama comes to USC? He's like, hey, we want to play you still.
And yeah, makes them look bad.
And the Pac-12 is the first ones to do it. But if the Big Ten does it and then the Pac-12 goes down that road, then USC has their out of, hey, look, our conference is mandating it and we're not the only conference to do it. The Big Ten did it to Oregon and Washington. So, I mean, our hands are tied here, right?
Well, they're not tied. They're just.
Well, they would be if the conference says we're playing a 10-game conference schedule.
Well, if Alabama knocks on your door and says we want to play and you choose not to play, it looks like you're backing out. It looks like you're scared.
But if the conference tells you you can't, is that still a thing? I mean, because then, the conference would look, I guess, scared in that regard.
Yeah. I'm just telling you what public perception is. I'm not saying what's right or what's wrong in this scenario. Every conference will be different. Every team will be different. Every school will have different philosophies. Every state will have different guidelines and rules. So I can't tell you, but I will tell you that if you back out of a game and a team wants to play, it's going to make you look bad. That's all we're talking about, public perception. That's it.
But what I find is going to be the hard part in all this scheduling is that, all right, so if the Ivy League, they're an FCS program, and this is why when the NCAA tournament was canceled, the Ivy League has a seat at that table in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. Like, they can go to that.
Still don't make any money off of it.
The
though.
Ivy League cannot go to the FCS playoffs.
Yeah.
Like they can't do it.
Yeah.
They can't do it.
Right.
Nor can they affect the Power 5 because they rarely play a Power 5 program. But what if all the FCS programs say, all right, we don't make enough money to make this a reasonable thing, and say the FCS leagues go, all right, we're going to go to a cancellation. Maybe we're going to go to the spring.
Well, that's nuts, because the FCS does make money, and without making money, without doing those games and playing those Power 5 schools and other of that stuff, they are in serious trouble.
But do they make enough to do all the adequate testing and take all of the proper protocols right now as it would cost. Heck, we're looking at Major League Baseball teams can't even get their tests back promptly.
Yeah, I understand, but yeah. Nobody has that answer, man.
Yeah, but if they decide and the FCS decides to put a pin in things, look, I mean, that's big money games for that Power Fives and Group of Fives pay FCS programs to play them. And then that is also big holes in the schedule that could lead to the trickle up, I guess, of if FCS decides to bail on games, does then the Group of Five? Because Power Five is going to do their thing. They're going to do their thing, and this is going to...
Yeah, don't let the...
But that leads you to, all right, if FCS is doing it, then we're just going to go with our only conference schedules.
It's kind of, if you look at it, you're in your garage, and you're looking in your garage, and you got so much crap in your garage. You got all this other stuff. You just buy it, and it's sitting in there. And my analogy would be is that I do believe college football has there might be purging that needs to be done. If you want to purge a little bit and clean house, and there might be some schools that drop, there might be schools that have decided to come in and probably shouldn't have, Georgia State. Things that have happened over the years where they've been traditional and they might not financially make sense, there might be a purging. There might be elimination of that. And then as the Power Five grows or actually shrinks, becomes a Power Four and shrinks even more. I'm not saying that I'm a fan of it because I'm not. Those jobs and those opportunities for athletes need to get bigger and bigger. But this is a time when you're going to see elimination.
You know what I hope gets eliminated? Is all of the future non-conference games that have been scheduled for like 2035, because that's a big problem with this. Like if Ohio State, Oregon gets canceled, or Michigan, UW, or SC, Alabama, there's no room for that game to be made up. Like there's no room at all because it's like, oh, sorry, our schedule's full until, 2040, not going to be able to get that one back in. I hope they just say either we're done with it, or it just gets pushed back to next year, and everything just gets pushed back.
All of it just sucks.
All right, right?
I was sitting a year. Can you imagine sitting a year ago right now going, hey, guess what? In 2020, where we're sitting, we're going to be talking about teams not playing, not even anything, nobody doing anything, no money, no nothing, no football, no nothing. A year ago today, if I would have told you that, you would have slapped me upside the head and laughed me off of this radio station.
Mm-hmm.
You would have called me a complete, utter moron. Which you do anyway, so that really doesn't. That actually,
it would have
that,
just been a different
actually,
reason.
Actually, that would have been the same day.
It would have been a different
reason.
You
do that on a daily basis.
That's right.
I call myself a moron anyway. Hey, what the hell is going on?
How much would you pay to go to a big league baseball game? You could do it. You can go to a Cubs game this year for a pretty penny. Dustin Cam on the Fan. All right, got a question for you here. How much would you pay to see a live sporting event now? It's been so long since we've had the possibility of going to watch live sports. We're going on, in 2 days, it will be officially 4 months since the last live sporting event was able to be seen by fans. 4 months. And the Chicago Cubs are going to have an option, though it's not through the team itself. You know that that place behind Wrigley Field that sells the rooftop seats for games? You used to have the big Budweiser sign on the roof there.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to be at 25% capacity, but the price tag is $350 for one ticket. $350. Just to get your foot in the door. And by the way, you're that far away. That's like sitting in the nosebleeds at a normal game.
Mm-hmm.
Would you pay $350 to go to Wrigley Field?
If I loved baseball, I would. If I really loved my Cubs, I probably would. And if I was a single guy or maybe I didn't have a bunch of kids and a bunch of expenditures, I there's plenty of people with money that can do that in Chicago, right?
Sure. There's a lot of people I think that will go to Chicago just to go and see a game because... Yeah. I think a lot of folks are in the, it would be an experience thing, kind of safety be damned, of traveling, whether it's like across the country or whatever.
Well, it makes sense.
They would want to go and be like, yeah, I saw a live sporting event during the pandemic. I think a lot of people are going to go down that road, but $350 for a game in the rooftop.
Well, according to Buster Only, he went on morning show. I think it was Sports Radio 810 this morning, but he was talking about Major League Baseball still to this day, because there's not going to be any fans. They will still have blackout games with your local teams.
No, you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. No, I'm not kidding.
How?
So even during the time where you can't go watch your team play, Major League Baseball still going to have blackouts built into their broadcast, because why? I have zero ideas. This is a quote from Buster only. They're going to continue with their quote-unquote blackout ability and rights. Here you go, baseball. Just continue to flounder on your face, slap all your fans, and look at you and go, you're trying to promote your game. You're going to hold on to these broadcasting ideals that you said is, well, it's just the standard thing we do, and offer $350 tickets to sit on top of bleachers. Just keep doing it.
That doesn't make sense, because isn't the whole blackout thing based on a percentage of tickets that are sold?
And
that's
been a dumb
idea before any of this happened. And that this is even more dumb now. But is it blackout as if, like, all right, say I watch on my MLB League Pass, right? If I do the MLB TV deal, and I watch the
The applications and some of the applications and some of the streaming services that they're going to be able to have for those people that don't have all that stuff. There's all these blackout things. You would think Major League Baseball would just be like, open it up. Whatever you want to watch with any platform.
But this kind of does make sense because of how territorial baseball franchises are. So this is like the case where if I enjoy watching the Astros broadcast on the MLB TV app, and they come up and they play in Seattle, that is when those games are blacked out, because it's like, hey, the Mariners are so territorial over this area. They want you only to be watching en route, and they only want you to be watching their broadcast.
So they can bump up their numbers. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, similar for Buck and the Giants. If the Giants come up and they play in Seattle, he won't be able to watch the local broadcast, which is also a dumb thing. It's not like you have to sell a certain amount of seats.
Yeah, baseball's always short-sighted anyways. This would just be right in line with not realizing that they have such a better chance to promote and grow their game if they just make everything available
now. Question for you then, Buck, because we've had this discussion before. What is worse, what the PGA Tour does, what they don't broadcast, or what Major League Baseball does?
Ooh, that's tough, because it's like with the PGA Tour, it's not so much about not getting to see one guy the way you wouldn't be able to see like one team if they were blacked out. But I mean, I guess either way, you're talking about not being able to view sports that are currently being played. So maybe they are similar.
No, I think it's golf, because at least you'll be able to watch the game. It may not be with the broadcast crew you want, but with the golf one, it's like right now it's not on television.
But they charge you for an extra fee to be able to watch it.
That's right.
If baseball charged you an extra fee to be able to do that, would that be worth it?
I think for some it would, because they're so attached to their local broadcast crew.
Yeah, but isn't that why you pay for the MLB ticket and some of those other things you're doing?
Oh, absolutely.
You would think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, baseball, get out of your own way. That sounds familiar. We've said that before.
Yeah. Yep. They're working on it.
I also saw a report that some players are thinking about wearing masks while they're playing games.
Well, they're not doing it in Korea.
On the field.
Yeah, I know.
But, I mean, some guys are actually contemplating doing just that.
Well, whatever makes you feel comfortable, if you want to do that and continue to play,
that'd be a weird look.
Wear the mask. I don't know.
So,
hit a triple.
Yeah. Remember last year, Mike Fiers, obviously now infamous for being the rat for the Astros, but went on to pitch for the A's.
Yeah.
He, for one game last year, shaved his facial hair into like one big like curl over the top. So it was like a chin strap that went down
like
one
swoosh.
Side and went over the top of his lip and cut off. He pitched like that for one game. The A's have made face masks for their other players. That is Mike Fiers, like circular facial hair from the one day. So like they got their aces out there pitching with those on right now.
And what if these guys have these big beards or anything too, and a lot of big facial hair, and these masks can't even really cover, and it's just like, all right, if you need to, then wear it.
Every pitcher for the A's should be wearing a Raleigh Fingers mustache mask.
Yeah.
That should be mandatory for them. Raleigh Fingers mustache for every single one of those pitchers out there. Sign me up. Oh, by the way, you've mentioned golf. You see Tiger officially.
Oh, I know.
He back.
I saw it.
He will play next week at the Memorial.
Of course he plays at Jack's Tournament. He loves Jack's Tournament.
Yeah, that's where we all thought that he would be coming back and playing, but this is the Tiger move. He does it a week before, and he announces, all right, I'm coming back, folks.
Coming back.
So usually he does it so fans will just, you know, show out in huge numbers at the tournament.
The
TV
ratings will be massive.
Through the roof for that.
Sign me up.
Tiger Woods, y'all. He'll be back coming up next Thursday.
If you want a lot of Tiger, I'll give you a little sneak peek. Go to Golf TV. They've been doing an expose on him. They're doing a almost like a documentary series where they show him with his lifestyle, where he talks with people, where he helps him with your swings online. He shows you his house, his driving range, his equipment room, which is awesome to watch him work on equipment. You know, like Arnie and Jack had their big equipment rooms.
Oh, yeah.
And Jack had his, and then Arnie had his office. You get to see all the inside. Tiger's become very, very open to fans and people through Golf TV because it's part of his project also. But it's to look at his practice facility at his house and see all, you know, with his kids and stuff. It's a great way to get the inside more of him as he's becoming more open as he's getting older.
Getting a little older. We got Tiger news coming up next hour as well, because there's a hot take that, boy, I don't know if I can agree with Brandel Chambly any less on his take that he has about the great Tiger Woods. But coming up next, we've got our NFL Rapid Fire. If you've got rapid fire questions, text them to us, 503-250-1080. Plus, we've got, as part of our GOATs series, the GOATs of the AFC North. Start thinking, what's the greatest player that pops into your mind when you think Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Baltimore, Cincinnati? This is Dusty and Cam on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.